the U.S. EPA. We're on kind of a short time schedule.
You know, I think I bought a little time.
Did you? All right.
We bought some time, Kelsey and Mandy? Okay.
Very good. So we all know the administrator, so I don't think we need to go through a whole bio here. I think we've met you for the most part. So if you want to give a few statements, and we'll go ahead and ask some questions.
Wonderful. It's good to see you guys today. Good to be at the USDA. Sonny is a dear friend and someone that's doing a wonderful job for the president and for the country, and just excited about his leadership. And I love these wonderful conference rooms. They're very nice. But it's good to be with you. And I just want to emphasize a couple of issues up front. And I know there'll be various questions. One, I'll start with the WOTUS, the Waters United States rule. That is something that we've been working on since February 28th of last year. As you recall, the president issued an executive order February 28th of last year directing the EPA to take steps to evaluate rescission of that particular rule. And we began within 8 minutes of him issuing that executive order, actually put into the marketplace rulemaking documents to start that process. And we've been hard at it since that time. And there are really two or three things we're doing with respect to WOTUS. One is a proposed rescission, which is a withdrawal of the 2015 rule. And the reason we did it that way is because I believed it was very, very important to let folks know across the country that the 2015 rule was not going to spring back into existence. You know, that it was so abusive, so deficient, so inconsistent with the Clean Water Act's authority, that we didn't want landowners across the country guessing about whether that 2015 rule is going to spring back into existence. And so, you know, when you define a dry creek bed and a puddle and ephemeral drainage ditch as a water of the United States, that should tell you a lot about what needs to be fixed. And so we had that rule in the marketplace to withdraw the 2015 rule, and that began in earnest. And then we've got something that a lot of folks aren't talking about, which is a replacement, a substitute definition of what a water of the United States will be going forward. And that's extremely important because, again, to enhance enhance certainty and to provide confidence to the American people that we are acting consistent with our authority in the Clean Water Act, we need to provide a solid definition in that regard. And so that proposed rule will be coming out likely next month, May, June timeframe, and we will be done with that process, prayerfully, by the end of the year with respect to the replacement definition. And what I would like to tell you about that is that our proposal is going to be inspired by Justice Scalia in the Rapanos decision. That was actually part of that February 28th executive order that the president signed. And what I mean inspired, I mean Justice Scalia had a lot of questions, a lot of analysis in the Rapanos case about what a water of the United States is or should be, and versus what it isn't. And we're going to, you know, learn from that and make informed decisions about what a water of the United States is. Now, to give you an example about this situation, I was in Salt Lake City last year touring a subdivision that was being built there in Salt Lake City, and I was with an Army Corps of Engineers representative. And this Army Corps of Engineers representative pointed to an ephemeral drainage ditch there in Salt Lake City, and the subdivision said, "That's a water of the United States." And I said, "Well, I don't think it's going to be anymore, you know, based upon our approach." So this is, you know, federal jurisdiction, state jurisdiction, the Clean Water Act's oversight and authority need to be clearly defined, because we don't want landowners, whether it's farmers and ranchers, those who are building subdivisions, oil and gas, I mean, all land use decisions were impacted by that definition in 2015. And it made the EPA and the federal government the first stop for permission to use your land. That clearly is inconsistent with the objectives of the Clean Water Act, and we're going to get that fixed in 2018. You've seen recent action that we've taken as an agency on EPCRA and CERCLA. That's been a major point of concern with respect to methane emissions. I've got members of my team here that can unpack that some more as well. As you know, EPCRA dealt with that issue by having agricultural exemption, you know, clearly stated in the statute. The CERCLA statute was a little bit less clear, and Congress recently dealt with that through amendments through the appropriations process, which was very, very good, because it provided us clarity. We were taking steps to address it from a regulatory perspective, trying to raise reportable quantities potentially to address, but it was far better for Congress to provide that clarity. I'm glad they did. So I feel like we're tracking well there with EPCRA and CERCLA, but look forward to your questions there. And look, I've spent some wonderful time across the Midwest, in Iowa, Nebraska, my good friend Governor Ricketts, we're advancing changes and I think really embodying the kind of change at the agency that shows adherence to the RFS statute. When I came into this position, as you know, the agency routinely failed to meet the deadline that was set every November, the volume obligations that were, and I made a commitment during the confirmation process that we were actually going to heed that and actually get it done each November, and we met our deadline last November. We're going to meet our deadline this November with respect to the volume obligations. As you know, with conventional, we kept that at the cap under the statute of 15 billion gallons. We're actively reviewing, from a legal perspective, the ability to grant the RVP waiver, which is, I think, very important to folks across the country to allow the sell of E15 12 months a year. We've been actively engaged in that legal analysis for months, and it is a legal analysis. It's not a policy decision. We're trying to make an informed decision about what the statute permits and make a very solid and informed decision there. So I believe that we're tracking well in those areas and have been working very closely with Sunny at evaluating those issues as well. So it's good to see you. I think those are three big areas that I would highlight for you. And I'll look for my team over here, Mandy and Kelsey. Anything that was on the list that you wanted me to address?
I think that's a good setup.
Okay. Well, it's good to see you, and welcome. And I was with – what a wonderful ceremony this morning. My little star here is from the welcoming the French president, President Macron, to the United States. What a wonderful event this morning. The friendship between France and the United States obviously goes back to our beginnings, our inception. And what a friend they were to us during the time of independence. And it's a close relationship, and glad to see their representatives here today and the president. So look forward to your questions.
Mr. Pruitt,
yes.
You've made the commitment to the 15 billion gallons, but the renewable fuels industry obviously feels that your granting of the waivers of the RFS to the refineries has eroded that 15 billion. Could you explain, because there seems to be a lot of uncertainty about what criteria you're using, what's a small refinery, what's a hardship, and questions about who's been receiving those waivers. Could you explain
that? And the small refinery exemption, you said it well. I mean, it's not subjective in nature, it's objective, and it's on a facility by facility basis. So even if you're a parent company, and let's say you have, and I'm just saying this hypothetical, let's say you have 10 facilities across the country, whether you qualify for that small refinery exemption is not based upon the compiling of all the information from 10. It's facility by facility. And it's 75,000 gallons or less that's produced that triggers whether they can even apply. So, we had 24, I think, as I recall, applications in 2017, which related back to 2016. A few more this year that relate to the 2017 window, but we are constrained. I mean, we have a statutory criteria by which we have to make those decisions. We have to look at the economic challenges. And oh, by the way, DOE is involved in that. Department of Energy is involved in that. And what's happened historically that has not worked well is that DOE and the EPA have not been working together and collaboratively. We have, and that's we use their data, and we make informed decisions based upon their data, and it's objectively and statutorily driven. And if the criteria met, then we have the authority to grant. If the criteria aren't met, we don't. So it's I think there's been a little bit of concern or perspective that perhaps that we are engaged in a subjective analysis, and that it's a matter of policy that we're engaging in the granting of these exemptions, and that's just simply not the case. Mandy, would you add anything to that?
Are you getting any guidance or input from the White House on that?
Well, look, I mean, we work very closely with NEC and many folks at the White House on those issues. I mean, the president does empower, both Sonny and myself and Rick to make decisions each within our space. I mean, what we're doing is interagency, making sure that we're collaborating and working together to make informed decisions about whether the applications should be met or not. And I think that's important. I think that's been missed the last several years, and I think Rick Perry would echo that. Yes, sir.
Mr. Minister, there was a subcommittee hearing on the Energy Committee in the House recently, and the auto manufacturers, I understand, are suggesting that if they're going to meet the CAFE standards, they've got to have a higher octane.
That's a tremendous idea. I mean, I'm sorry, go ahead. No, I've actually met with the Auto Alliance. It's something we've been talking about for the last year or so. Our agency, the EPA, has not historically looked at fuel as a way to achieve, you know, better outcomes as far as GHG reduction and the rest and the CAFE standards overall. 95 octane is something that or high octane, just generally speaking, is something that we should and shall look at it. I mean, and I think it's very, very important going forward. It's beneficial to the ethanol industry and to the ag sector. It's beneficial to the auto sector because they're deploying it elsewhere in the world, in Europe particularly. So, you know, we have opportunities there that we've not seized as a country, and it's opportunities that we need to pursue. In fact, I had a recent meeting about that very issue with the Auto Alliance.
Yeah, we seem to be stuck in a bubble of E15, but even the ability to sell it year round. The industry is across the horizon, and we appear to be stuck at square one.
Well, I wouldn't be that pessimistic. I mean, square one would be that there's not consideration ongoing about granting the RVP or the E15. And I will tell you, it's been in earnest for months and months and months. You know, this is truly a legal issue. I mean, an interpretation of the statute, and what you have to do is make sure that you're well positioned on this decision because of the prospects for litigation. So I'm actually more bullish and more optimistic about that very thing than perhaps from previous administrations because of the ongoing analysis that we're engaged in. Oh, did we have an event last year?
I think you were wandering around Capitol Hill and we sort of suckered you out.
Oh, is that right? Well, that was very good of you guys.
You told us at the events a year ago that you were looking into the RVP waiver and you hoped you could get there. Respectfully, it seems to me you either have the authority or you don't. So how much longer should we expect this review process?
You know, what's interesting, you know, before we showed up at the agency, they didn't do anything in months. They did things in years. So this is not a matter of being dilatory. It's a matter of being smart and thoughtful about the bases of the decision. I mean, we have to build a record. We have to build an analysis to make sure that it's done and done right. Because what you don't want is to make the decision and then have an avalanche of litigation that then creates uncertainty about the very deployment of what we're talking about. So it may seem like it's taken some time. I'm a little bit impatient on a lot of things. I'm pushing and have been pushing for many months and will continue to do so.
But does it really take a year? But like I said, you either have the authority or you don't.
I mean, I think I've...
This process has taken a long, long time.
Yeah, I would only tell you that internally, perhaps I'm aware of things as far as building the record that you may not be. And we're working diligently to address the issue. Well, I mean, because we make decisions based upon a statutory framework. I mean, you know, Oklahoma is an oil and gas state, but we're also the top three in the country in renewable energy as far as producing electricity. You know, so we have been able to provide, I think, a very good example about how we can do both. And, you know, just yesterday I was in Georgia and announced carbon neutrality with respect to biomass. I think that, look, I'm optimistic about all fuels being used, either to address CAFE or to obviously provide options to American consumers, and the agency being used historically as a way to pick winners and losers is something that we're working to make sure that doesn't continue. We want to encourage all forms of energy, and the president's talked about energy dominance, not just energy independence. And we exported, as you know, about 1 billion-plus gallons of ethanol last year, maybe a little bit more than that. And, you know, Mexico is looking at a similar statute to the RFS, as I understand it presently. I've talked to Robert Lighthizer and some others about the opportunities that presents to our ag sector domestically to truly encourage more exporting of ethanol to Mexico and other markets. So I'm really I continue to be very optimistic and excited about the partnership that exists between our agencies and hopefully continue to make progress. Well, look, I mean, we have obligation to consult with Department of Ag with respect to the volume obligations, as an example. That's not just an obligatory on my part. It's something that we look forward to as far as talking to Sonny. I've mentioned Rick Perry already with respect to the role he plays on some of these issues around the small refinery issue. You know, so I think it's just a matter of portfolio, you know, on whatever it is that DOE or Department of Ag or our agency are working upon, RFS particularly. I can tell you, from my perspective, I don't think there's been a better collaborative effort between Department of Ag and EPA ever around an issue. I think if you look at past administrations, I'm quite sure that the EPA administrator and the Department of Ag weren't working as closely together as Sonny and I are on those issues. In fact, we've traveled. I'm sorry, Sonny and I've spent quite a bit of time in the field on those issues. You know, and I do want to emphasize that. I mean, part of what you know happens in D.C. is that you spend so much time here, and you spend so much time interfacing with associations. You don't spend time with true stakeholders, farmers and ranchers and producers across the country. And I've done that firsthand in Nebraska, Iowa, and elsewhere with respect to these issues, and so has Sonny. And we've done that together. And I think that's invaluable, you know, as we're making these decisions. It helps educate and inform me about the prospects and opportunity that exist around RVP and others. And so it's been very encouraging in that regard. I'm sorry to interrupt, but yeah. But think about that for a second. I mean, that's what's a little bit – the point of obligation issue, taking off the table, you know, meeting the deadlines, the RVOs. And that was a big issue when this administration came in and how that was routinely missed by previous administrations. You know, the commitment to the levels. I mentioned conventional on the $15 billion. And I know this gentleman's question about the time it's taken to address the RVP. Can you name another administration that is using – all regulatory authority and power to try to address that? I mean, there are many. There's bills before Congress right now, as you know, to do what? Amend the statute to provide the ability to sell E15 year-round. I mean, so for us to be taking regulatory steps, to be contemplating regulatory steps, I think shows the kind of commitment this administration has to the ethanol industry, generally speaking. So I think we need to, you know, to look backward a little bit and then look today about what kind of certainty has taken place, not just with respect to ethanol, but with WOTUS and the rest and the ag sector. I mean, I remain very optimistic and bullish about our ability to get these things done, and we'll be able to see that happen. I don't know if I answered your question directly, but what was there another part of that? I think what needs to be known about that is that was actually contemplated and submitted by what? That was discussions that came out of Congress. And these meetings that took place initially were prompted by discussions by various senators, and those discussions continue. I pray that there's a path forward that provides opportunity to the ag sector and also certainty around the RIN markets. I will tell you that to the degree that the RIN market is volatile, you know, for it to go up to 80 cents and drop to 30 cents and go to 60 cents. And that volatility is not good for anyone, because then it creates issues on Capitol Hill about, you know, RFS reform and stuff because of volatility. We need stability, I think, across the spectrum on RFS issues, and that includes the RIN markets as well. We think there are some things we can do that are not controversial, such as transparency with respect to the RIN markets, who can buy, who can sell, how long can you hold a RIN. There seems to be some hoarding that's going on that inflates the value of RINs to a certain degree. So all that's yet to be determined, you know, as far as efforts that can be deployed there. But I will tell you, it's important we get stability across these platforms. I mean, that's what people want, so they can invest and see growth. The penetration of ethanol in the marketplace has been substantial since 2005-2006 timeframe. We'll see that going on in the future, but we need stability and certainty, and this is part of the providing answers there.
Can I follow that?
Yes, sir.
Is that an administrative
On what part?
Congressional responsibility.
On which part?
These amendments to RFS, RIN caps, the things that we're talking about.
Well, let me clarify. I mean, it. When I was talking about transparency in the marketplace, you know, I believe that's administratively determined. I mean, the platforms were created by the EPA. I mean, the trading platform was created. The statute was very broad and the authority given to the agency. And what we've seen perhaps is some abuse with respect to the trading platform. And so I think whatever steps there need to be taken can be taken from a regulatory perspective. The RVP issue that's been talked about earlier, I think it's a debatable question on whether it's Congress or a regulatory response. That's why it's taken us time to address that. We want to make sure we get our ducks in a row if we take that step from a regulatory perspective. Maybe other issues specifically you'd like to ask, but I think it varies in the question, I guess, and what makes up part of the overall reform. This gentleman here, if you don't mind, he's been very patient, and I don't want to be I want to make sure you get an opportunity to ask your question.
Sure.
Yeah.
Eric Pfeiffer, Hoosier Ag Today. We were talking about transparency. Farm State Senator sent a letter to you last week asking for just that and these hardship waivers. Have they received a response from you, or what is your response as far as transparency? Who is receiving the waivers? And you're saying it's a statute issue. Maybe should that letter have gone to someone else?
No, the answer would be is exactly what I shared earlier. This is, I can't emphasize enough that the granting of the small refinery exemptions is objectively determined. It's not policy. It's not subjective. There are criteria that we have to consider. DOE data, the amount produced on a daily basis. It's a facility by facility review. All that is driven objectively. And then we make an informed decision based upon that data. It's that simple. So. Well, I mean, if Congress changes that, yeah, I think that if Congress changed it, absolutely, we would be responsive to that. I mean, all we're doing is administering it right now. That's all we're doing. And we'll continue to do so. But whatever data they need, we'll provide. And in fact, we've provided it to folks here at Ag, and we share that with folks as they ask. So thank you all. It's good to see you, and appreciate the opportunity. And where did we see each other last? I mean, it was in the